This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sharp Money, first Sharp Money of November, November 1, 2023, as we welcome you in. VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles as we say hi. Hope you're having a nice day. The boys there, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson at the D, Bar Canada, downtown Las Vegas, Fremont Street. Got a big show coming up for you, of course. Busy time of the year. Let's get into it. The Rangers and D-backs. The Rangers absolutely pummeled the D-backs yesterday. They'll reset the rotations tonight with the Rangers a chance to close it out. Evaldi on the bump. For the Rangers, Arizona's going to throw Gallen on top of that. Of course, you've got some college football. You've got a full slate in the NBA with 13 games, four games on the ice, plenty to get to. The trade deadline has come and gone yesterday, of course, the NFL. A lot of news to get to. Chris Jimenez is going to join coming up in just about 44 minutes here on Sharp Money. Major League Baseball former player, of course. Mike Palm to join in the second hour, as is customary on a Wednesday. A little debate between he and Amal Shaw. Ari Wasserman, the Athletic national college football writer, will join to talk about the college football committee releasing the first of five rankings yesterday. Maybe a couple surprises, which we can discuss. And because of the Breeders' Cup coming up this weekend. Samich unavailable on Friday, but always a pro. He's moved back to Wednesday. We'll move Scott Spreitzer to Friday. As we say hi and kind of set the table, of course, the big news, Amal Shaw, last night, While You Were Sleeping, a great Beatles song. Also, Mark Davis, the 68-year-old older. Look, here's the thing I don't understand. I'm not really sure. Maybe we can start here. Maybe you two can explain the economics of making money as a pro football NFL owner of one of 32. I know the economics are set up like this. You've got your local and you've got your national revenue. The national revenue is shared, merchandising, licensing, TV deals, a lot of money there. And then you've got your local. And we talk about the Raiders, concessions in the new stadium, ticket sales, corporate sponsorship. Like, you know, it's different buckets. But what I'm confused by, although I'll give Mark Davis credit, and if you don't know, Josh McDaniels, 9-16, 1.5 years into his head coaching tenure there with the Raiders, was let go late last night. Mark Davis, his only income, Amal, is ownership, but he now owes Josh McDaniels for 4 years, and he's going to continue to pay off John Gruden the contract, because remember, all of these head coaching deals are guaranteed. So I guess we give the guy credit because he's putting his money where his mouth is. It's not going well. He moves on from McDaniels, and he's going to pay him a lot of money in the process.
Hey, you're absolutely right. First of all, quick shout out to you. Thank you for saying the team total on Arizona yesterday, because if we had taken the Diamondbacks, we had no shot there. At least we survived with the team total over 4.5. But
well, we got there late. My gosh, what an avalanche from the Rangers.
Right? Oh, it was unbelievable. But, you know, in terms of McDaniels, a couple things here. I think this is the best move for the Raiders organization. We were talking about it yesterday in terms of where does this team go. They look like they're in complete disarray. That looked like an organization and a football team that didn't want to be in Detroit, Michigan. It didn't look like they were going to be engaged the rest of the way. So I think this is a prudent move to change some things up here. It's not going to help the organization for this year, but you've got to make some desperate moves in terms of what you're going to put out there in 2024 going forward. And you mentioned it, the local revenue that comes in. Look, there's not a single NFL owner anybody should be crying for. I've actually always said we have the worst stadium deal in America here, actually the worst anywhere, at least in North America that I'm aware of. It's $750 million of public funds have gone to the Raiders for this stadium. If you want public financing, you should have to open your books up. Nobody wants to have the NFL open their books up because they're making so much money. No reason to shed a tear for Mark Davis today, but I think this is the best football move for the Raiders. And it was a little bit surprising to me that, and you said it best yesterday, maybe they should have moved on from Davante Adams and Max Crosby, because you want to be able to get some pieces and you want to accumulate draft picks like we see some of the other teams like Washington doing right now.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, it was the right move. And maybe, I don't know, big guy, if you do have the finances, what they owe McDaniels, what the Raiders will owe John Gruden moving forward. But Amal, they're 31st in total offense. They're 30th, the Raiders, in points per game. They're 32nd in rush yards, and a lot of that has to do with how they bungled the Josh Jacobs situation with the franchise and then extending him by a year. He didn't practice, no preseason, the whole lot. Now, the details, again, stunning, 4 years left on McDaniel's deal. This is the second time a year and a half into a head coaching job McDaniels has been fired. He was 28 games into his tenure with the Broncos years ago. He was 11-17. He gone. He was 25 games into his tenure with the Raiders, 9-16. He gone. So I think there's probably something to the idea that maybe there's personality conflicts along the way, because sometimes charm can keep you around for a little bit longer. Not in the case of Josh McDaniels. Antonio Pierce, the old Giant, is going to take over as the interim head coach. Also on his way out, Dave Ziegler, who came over from the Patriots. He was the general manager, and he's on his way out as well. We can get to a lot of the mismanagement, which I have highlighted here, but as we say hi to the big guy, Dustin Sweetelson, do you know how much now Mark Davis, and kudos to him, do you know how much he owes McDaniels and now Gruden on the way?
I'm seeing varying reports of two numbers consistently out there. So basically between 80 and 90 million combined for the two coaches who are no longer the head coaches.
McDaniel's got a six-year deal for $60 million. Let's say he pays him out for this year because it's obviously 2 years in. And then he's got $40 million left. And then you mentioned it with that one. But, Patrick, here's the thing I don't understand in the NFL. Why would you give a head coach a six-year deal who's not a Bill Belichick or someone of that caliber who's proven themselves? Because it's not like Josh McDaniels got to go out and say, hey, guys, I'm coming to recruit you. I'm going to be here in 4 years. It doesn't make sense to me. Why pay a guy for that many years? There would have been no difference. You think Josh McDaniels wouldn't have had a pen in his hand when he said, here, it's 4 years and $40 million?
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. I guess he got infatuated, you know, like a lot do, and we've talked ad nauseum about the Bill Belichick coaching tree and the lack of success. I think Mark Davis, who seems impressionable, got excited, titillated by what he was doing, McDaniels, and you mentioned it a million times. We're starting to see, without this Tom Brady guy, a lot of these people seem to have a little less success. McDaniels calling an offense, Bill Belichick running a team. Of course, we've seen it. But when you take a look, first off, you can't cry for McDaniels. Like you mentioned, he's got, what, $60 million coming to him. But a lot of mistakes. Look, I think they misread the concept of what the Raiders were when they got there. Remember, it was coming off the Bisaccia playoff run. Then they go ahead and trade their first two picks for Davante Adams, who was 29 years old at the time. Chandler Jones, Amal, they gave him a three-year, $51 million deal at 32 years old. That hasn't worked out for myriad reasons. They extended Derek Carr and then got no compensation back for him when they decided they soured on him. They botched the Josh Jacobs deal with the franchise tag, then the extension. Now he's the worst back in football. Renfro, they gave a two-year, $32 million deal. He hasn't had a catch all year. Darren Waller, they lost. They hired, again, a staff that was, well, I won't get into that. Anyway. That's where we are.
Go ahead.
And again, I could just keep going. Max Crosby, Colton Miller, Davante Adams, those guys are still on the roster. Those are the only dudes you could have recouped some equity for yesterday during the trade deadline. What are those guys doing on your roster?
It's a good point. You got to start over. But, like, to me, McDaniels is one of the great scam jobs of all time.
There's no question.
It's George Santos level, like, fraudery. Like, I can't believe this guy, one, got a second chance. But when you look at his record between Denver and the Raiders, which, by the way, doesn't go to year three in either. 09 to 2010 with Denver, 22 to 23 with the Raiders, doesn't make it out of year two. His combined record is 20 and 33. That's 37%. ATS, he's 24 and 29. This is one of the great scams in American sports history.
Bernie Madoff said Josh McDaniels could work for me. Yeah. I mean, that's just the reality of it.
He had two wins as a Raider head coach over teams with winning records.
Yikes.
I'll repeat that. Two wins. And we didn't even mention Indianapolis. You guys realize it's not that he turned his back on the franchise. He hired a coaching staff.
Yeah, people.
He got to the point of hiring a staff.
It gets overlooked.
And then just said, I'm out.
It gets overlooked because remember, Belichick did the same thing with the Jets. Remember, he initially was going to go to the Jets, and they went to the Giants. I'm sorry, to the Patriots from there. But, you know, you mentioned it, the Belichick coaching tree. You see some of the names. You know, we talk about Kenneth Walker deserving some of that Mel Tucker money. Tom Brady should be getting money from about 20 coaches in the National Football League, because most of these guys who've coached under Belichick can't coach, but Brady is the reason why they have jobs. It is unbelievable. By the way, I would have loved to have seen Josh McDaniels get fired, and then today at Bellagio or Mandalay Bay, just sitting there playing roulette, just betting on red only all day. He's like, hey, man, I got $40 million coming. I'm good.
What, again, you're right. And Max Crosby... We joked about how young he is. Yeah. He's under a wonderful deal. So you could have got a ton back, because there's 3 years left on the deal. That's not expensive. You could have got a ton for him. Colton Miller, you get a first rounder for. Devontae, you probably recoup one of the first rounders for a desperate team. We just saw the Bears give up a second rounder for a player that they don't even have rights over. Like, what are the Raiders think? Again, what are the Raiders thinking? Well, they just fired their GM, so there's part.
There's a lot of dysfunctional professional sports franchises. I think that they are very close, if not number one. When you look over the years, we're talking since 1989, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 full-time head coaches. That does include two or three interims in there, and none of these guys make it to like their fifth year.
But the bigger problem with this organization has been not just the coaching ineptitude, it's been the front office. It's been drafting. Tyree Wilson, first round so far, bust. You go back 2 years. Alex Leatherwood was a first round pick at tackle from Alabama. He's not even on the roster anymore. I mean, come on. We know what happened to Henry Ruggs. Cleveland Farrell, when he got the call from Mike Mayock, was like, I'm sorry, do you have the right phone number?
We couldn't believe that. Could not believe it. So, Josh McDaniels, kind of a stunner, because Mark Davis doesn't have a bunch of cash laying around. Kind of a stunner. He's going to pay Josh McDaniels to go away. The question now in the head coaching market is, who's next? We'll come back and discuss.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, we've got odds as far as the Raiders' next head coach. Also, odds on the next head coach to be fired. The first to go down this year, 2023, NFL-wise. Josh McDaniels is out as the head coach of the Raiders. Late last night while you were sleeping, East Coasters, no doubt. Mark Davis makes the decision a year and a half in. 25 games in, 9-16 for McDaniels. Amal said it during the break, though. If you're watching Monday night, where the Raiders got pummeled at the Lions, you know, there was a lot of disinterest, listless vibes from the Raiders. It's not just Devontae Adams. You could tell there's just an overall just horrific vibe around the franchise. I think the only, as we welcome you back here, Sharp Money, I'm Patrick Maher, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. Boys, we've got a ton to do. So let's do this for another segment, then we'll get off of it. But I think the only shocking part of this, Amal, would be there was a confluence of reasons to think it was going to be Ron Rivera. The team's underachieved. The team just went into sell mode, and it's got a new ownership group. Like, the Harris group could have said with the Washington Commanders, let's throw Bieniemy in there. He's a name that's been bantied about. Rivera's completely checked out. We're going to tear it down anyway. You all are gone. So if you're a betting man in the first coach to be fired market, Rivera had to be the favorite, because you also have an ownership group with Mark Davis that doesn't have any cash. He's only a year and a half in, and this dude just got a six-year deal in Josh McDaniels. Like, to say this was going to be the first, even if it was credible, like, you and I agree, McDaniels had to go. There was absolutely no question. We've been talking about it ever since I saw him standing on Saturn when he was coaching the team in Los Angeles on the sideline when the dude wasn't even engaged. I'm like, what is this? But if you were just looking at the market, I think Rivera would have been the first one to go, no?
I would agree with you there. I think it comes as a surprise simply based on the number of years he had left on his contract. That's a big shock. And then on top of it, you mentioned it, Ron Rivera, new ownership group. I think with the Rivera situation, Patrick, I don't know if maybe they're just deciding, let's wait until the end of the year. We're going to make a move.
Probably.
But I like your suggestion. Hey, why not go with Bieniemy? If he works out as the head coach, you've got a seamless transition. You don't have to go through the whole rigmarole. You can just sit there and put him in place the next year and go forward from there. But I am surprised that the Raiders made this move with the number of years remaining on Josh McDaniels' contract. I got to tell you another name that I thought might eventually pop up on there, even though their team is not struggling as much for a coach who'd get fired. Dennis Allen in New Orleans. I don't know if anybody's underachieving with more and doing less than Dennis
Allen.
Bring
him back to the Raiders.
Yeah, that's great.
That would be the most Raider hire of all time.
Trade for Dennis Allen.
The Raider hire that would happen right now because of economics is David Culley is the next head coach.
That was a name
bad.
That popped in my head.
I'll take your David Culley and one up you with Tom Gable. Or what was his name?
Tom Cable.
Well, it'd be tough to hire him now.
Very valid. Is Art Schell still hanging around?
No, RIP, I believe, as well, right?
Yeah. RIP. Yeah, shout to him. Yeah. Ron Rivera 3-2. Matt Eberflus 2-1.
Oh, yeah.
Matt LaFleur, these are odds for next coach to be fired. LaFleur is 6-1. Staley is 11-1. Todd Bowles is 12-1. If you take a look at the market, boys, as far as the next head coach, Jim Harbaugh, with all the craziness that's happening in Ann Arbor right now, 5-1. Ben Johnson, who everybody's going to try to pursue, the offense coordinator with the Lions, 7-1. Frank Smith, don't know who that is, 8-1. Dan Quinn, 9-1. Schwartz, 9-1. Kellen Moore, 10-1. Just a few names potentially for the Raiders' next head coach, Jamal.
Yeah, Frank Smith, the OC in Miami. But more importantly, Patrick, when you look at it, I'm going to eliminate a couple names off this list. I'm going to start with Jim Harbaugh. I'm going to take him off the list. And the reason why I believe the Raiders won't hire him, even though I think it'd be a good hire, you can say whatever you want about Harbaugh. I think overall he's a good football coach. I think he's going to command $15 to $17 million a year. Michigan's going to be paying him about $11 million. He's not going to go to an NFL team for less money. He's gotten a team within, what, a couple of plays of winning a Super Bowl. But to me, Ben Johnson makes the most sense. We've talked at length about him on this show. You have championed him quite a bit. Jared Goff is playing the best football of his career, arguably, and he's done a great job. And then I think Jim Schwartz is a guy that you can get for a decent price, but this team needs a defensive-minded coach, in my estimation. That's where they've been so flawed for the last several years on the offensive side of the ball. They have some good, talented, skill position pieces, but I think when you look at it, Jim Schwartz, even though in essence he'd be recycled as a former head coach, I think he'd be a pretty good fit, and you won't have to pay him that $10 million. I still can't even figure out why they paid McDaniels that kind of money when he got fired so miserably in Denver.
It's going to be an uphill battle for whoever comes in, the general manager and the head coach. They're going to have to tell Mark Davis, you're going to have to be patient, dude.
Yeah.
Because this thing needs to be imploded. We were already, with what Mayock and Gruden did, we were already standing on a house of cards. Your boy Rich Bisaccia took us on a four-game heater to end the season, beating the Chargers to get into the postseason to get disrespected by the Bengals. That was all a house of cards. That was crystallized. So now, here comes the next head coach. I know, big guy, you've got your list of the Dustin Swedelson, who should be atop the list for the Raiders coming up here.
Yeah, I love Ben Johnson. I don't know if the Raiders are good enough to be in the Ben Johnson sweepstakes. I think he's going to have his pick of any job he wants. And I guess the Raiders could be in the mix simply because they will not be in the playoffs, so they can start looking at people right away. But I think he's going to be able to have a better job than this dysfunctional organization. I think they don't need a play caller. They need a leader of this organization. They need someone to calm the ship during this rough patch of waves. So here's my top 10 Raiders coach candidates. Dabo Sweeney.
Hold on, real quick. Amal, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I just want to say, you know what? Dustin brings up a good point about Johnson. I would not want to take the Raiders job for one reason. I'm looking at young Justin Herbert, and I'm looking at 26-year-old Patrick Mahomes. I'm not saying you should be scared of competition, but you also have to be realistic with the roster and who you're going to get in as quarterback to compete with those guys.
Ben Johnson is a math major from North Carolina. He's going to sit in front of that bowl cut at P.F. Chang's and say, I've got my pick of the rest of the league. Appreciate the conversation, Mark. I'm out, okay? Because you also flew me coach because you're paying other coaches.
Southwest.
That's an issue. I'm guessing Ben Johnson's smart enough to get the hell out of there. Jim Schwartz is fourth on your list. That would be a tremendous pick, and I can get into why in just a second.
Go ahead, Mark.
No, I was just going to ask Patrick, do you think he gets a direct flight from Detroit from Metro out here, or is that a connection with Mark Davis?
I think
Davis?
That goes through O'Hare when you're talking about Mark Davis with the hair. Okay, big guy, let's get to your list
All
here.
Right, look, the bottom, Dabo Swinney, whatever. David Shaw has ties this organization. I know people are really down on David Shaw because of what he did at Stanford at the end. He did win for a while there, and he's a former Raider coach. Eric Bieniemy, if anyone knows how to stop Patrick Mahomes, maybe it's the guy who coached Patrick Mahomes. Ben Johnson's only 7 on the list, but I agree, he's going to be the hot name out there. Number 6, I think Raheem Morris, the DC with LA, might need another shot as a head coach in the league. He's been really solid for a really long time, has stepped in a couple times. And then number 5, things are getting sour for Billy B over in New England. Let's bring him over here to the other side. Let him start from scratch with the Raiders, see how he does. Number 4, Jim Schwartz. Obviously, the defense. I agree with Maul. I think a defensive coach makes a lot of sense, especially in this division. Number 3 is Harbaugh. And the reason Harbaugh isn't number 1 for me is because I don't think this organization needs all the hoopla around another big splashy hire and a big name. And again, as Maul pointed out, is going to make a lot of money. They did that the last two times with Gruden and with McDaniels, and it hasn't worked. Number 2, Rich Bisaccia. They won under him. They loved him. They played hard for him. This team needs an inspirational guy. They need a leader. And you could probably get him on a discount while you're paying those other two $90 million to not be your head coach. And then number 1, I don't get how this guy isn't the number 1 option. What he's done with the Dallas Cowboys defense has been remarkable since he got there. Complete turnaround. They have been a dominant force in the NFC. Also, I think his demeanor, he is a leader. He is quiet. He is professional. He won't give you bad attention to your organization. Dan Quinn won more than 10 games twice with the freaking Atlanta Falcons, went to a Super Bowl, and almost beat Bill Belichick. Dan Quinn, number 1 candidate for this job to me.
I don't think Dan Quinn's a bad choice. Jim Schwartz, Patrick, I think we both talked about being high on him. I think some of the names you put on this list are very good, but I'm going to tell you, this is going to be a problem for the Raiders. I think they're going to go on the cheap on the next head coach. It's not going to be a proven person. It's going to be somebody they can get in there at a lower rate. That's why I think Harbaugh should be eliminated off this list. I could be dead wrong, but it just feels like they're not going to want to pay someone an 8-figure income to be the head coach.
But also, not. I don't think they can do an up-and-comer. I think it needs someone who's going to stabilize things. I think they need a veteran, an older person. You can't just hire this young, flashy gun because the flash doesn't work.
I think your number 1 is tremendous, and I think that's probably, you know what, just my vibe, probably who ends up getting the job. I'll tell you, I love, and I didn't even think about him, number 9, David Shaw. And I'll give you one word, temperament.
Yes.
He's always had his eyes on the NFL. Everybody's always said, even while he had success at Stanford, he's more of an NFL guy. Feels like the type of person with the temperament that can just deal with the roller coaster that is the Raiders, is Mark Davis. He's always even keeled. I like the idea of Shaw. Knows how to run a program. I like Shaw. Schwartz is underrated as well. Did a good job, and then things fell apart. He was very young when he took the job with the Lions. It's a good list. When we come back, speaking of lists, the College Football Committee dropped their rankings. We'll discuss.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, bet $5, get $200 in bonus bets instantly at DraftKings for new customers. Just use the promo code SHARP, S-H-A-R-P. Download the DraftKings app. Remember, all bettors get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day at DraftKings. The crown is yours. Is it going to be the Rangers? That is the question. They pummeled the Diamondbacks last night in Game 4, 11-7, jumped all over them, top of the second, I believe, and third, 5 runs plated. Chris Jimenez, of course, 10 seasons in the majors, does an amazing job. SiriusXM, MLB Network radio host, Chris Jimenez, 5 on Twitter. And as we say hi to Chris, he's up in Reno. So let me ask you this. Before we get to the baseball, how do you fix Nevada football? Of Chris Ault. I remember Chris Ault back, and didn't he win 13 games one year? Like,
Absolutely. What
happened, and how do
There's
you
a
fix
statue
it?
Statue of him out here in front of the
football. The job is yours, Chris. Fix Nevada football.
Oh, man. I don't even know if I could do that at this point. It's been a rough few years, a very lean few years for sure, but they continue to kind of work in the talent, and you know, you can see the building blocks starting to take place. They just won their second game of the season, which is kind of sad to say, but at the same time, you know, there was a point this year where we didn't know if we were going to win one game. So I think the fact that we have won two is a stepping stone in the right direction, but there are some pieces. They just need a little bit more time.
Tell you what,
fair enough,
Patrick. I'll
that was
you
good.
The...
That you know what, you could run for mayor of Reno. That was a good answer.
Oh, I don't know about that either. I like it.
The offense looked good against New Mexico on Saturday.
Yeah, that, which has been big. Not? You know, they have had trouble scoring points, so it is nice to see them start to put you know a few nice drives together.
Well, no trouble for the Rangers last night scoring runs. You know, it almost felt like an avalanche early on. They go with the opener, and then I believe it was Castro that came in, and the Rangers. That's what it is, Chris. With that offense, that's the danger, because once it's clicking, they can pile on quickly. You know, 11-7 finish, it really wasn't that close. Let's talk about game four, then we'll fast forward to game five. What'd you think of last night?
Yeah, I mean, this is it's the unfortunate part of having a bullpen day, right? Is you're expecting 6-7, maybe 8 pitchers to pitch perfectly coming out of the bullpen. That's a difficult, you know, task to accomplish, especially against the best offense in Major League Baseball from the American League side of things, who is absolutely locked in right now. And oh yeah, by the way, not just Corey Seager is locked in. I mean, you lose the MVP of the ALCS and they just have other guys step right on in, continue to take it like it was no big deal. And Marcus Semien, who I think is their third best player, is starting to get hot, which is a very scary thing, you know, potentially for just this one more game.
Yeah, Chris, you bring up a good point. Semien struggled throughout most of the postseason, and he catches fire here. When you look at this team, Bruce Bochy is potentially a game away from winning his fourth World Series. What has made him such a great manager? And just it seems like San Diego, he takes the Padres to the World Series in 98, three times with the Giants, 10, 12, and 14. And now the Rangers. I mean, I'll be honest with you, when he took the job, I was like, he didn't want to just sit around? He took the Rangers job?
I know. We all kind of thought that, I think, to be completely honest with you. It's kind of like, wow, that's an interesting place to go. But you could see the pieces kind of being put into place there with Semien and Seager already, you know, having been signed those big contracts that they signed. But if you ask Boch, I think what he'll tell you is – it's good players, right? But I think what it is, yes, good players has a lot to do with that. But at the same point in time, it has a lot to do with the communication aspect of it. And I think guys just completely buy in to what he's all about. He has their backs. That plays huge in a clubhouse. He knows how to keep things light, airy, and have fun. Yet when it's serious at the same time, you know there's accountability there and respectability in Bochy that he's been there and he's done that. And you have to kind of, you know, take that into credit when you're a player, especially of a young player's ilk, and you have this, you know, potentially Hall of Fame manager telling you to do something different. You should probably listen to a guy like that.
Chris Jimenez joining us, taking a break from the trick-or-treating last night, all the coaching going on up there to give us a few minutes. Of course, SiriusXM Major League Baseball Network radio hosts in 10 years in the majors. So SiriusXM, you saw what happened with Mad Dog. He counted out this D-backs team, and they shoved it right back at him. And so I set it up that way to ask you. They're down 3-1. It's an 84-win team, probably overachieved to get here. Maybe that's why we don't count them out tonight. They reset the top of the rotation with Gallen. Where are you at tonight?
Yeah, I don't think you can count them out because they've proven to this point that they shouldn't be. And it seems like they play a little bit better with their backs against the wall as well. You know, we saw that in the series with Philadelphia, which I personally thought clearly was the better team. I actually thought Philadelphia had the best chance to win the World Series. I thought they were a better team than the Braves. And that's crazy to say, but that team was put together. They were built to win. Now they're also pretty good, well set for the future as well. But they took care of that team by being extremely scrappy, being extremely aggressive on the bases. In the few losses that we've seen the Diamondbacks have this year, they've been very ordinary on the base pass. And we've heard Torrey Lovullo talk consistently about playing their style and their brand of baseball. And that's extremely aggressive. It's putting pressure on the defense. It's grinding out at bats. Obviously, pitching and defense from their side of things has been fantastic. Aside from last night, a little bit of a blow up in the bullpen there. But it was a lot of lower leverage guys, right? They should be set up with arguably the potential favorite for the Cy Young in the National League this year in Zach Gallen, and a fully loaded leverage bullpen remaining. So I think if there's a day to count them out, I wouldn't be today by any means, because I feel like this might be their best opportunity to win. You could probably say the same thing about the Rangers for that matter.
Chris, is how important is it for Arizona to get on the board first? I know they did in game number one. It didn't work out the way they wanted. But, boy, when you see a crooked number up in the third, three in the third in game three, a five spot yesterday in the second inning, how difficult is it as a player when you're walking off the field, you're going to the bottom of the second, and now you see you're down a grand slam and a solo?
Yeah, trust me, it's extremely difficult. Because, you know, you start to, once it starts to get up there a little bit, you start to look at the possibilities of how are we going to make this happen? What is it going to take? Where are we at in our lineup? You know, how is that going to figure out a way like, okay, we need two base hits and a bomb? Or it's, you know, it's one thing to get a bloop and a blast, which is a fun thing to talk about all the time. And I guess if you're the Texas Rangers, pretty much anybody 1-9 can hit a bomb in this lineup right now. But what they've been so good at is putting pressure on continually. I know they scored early last night and put a 10 spot up on Arizona by the third inning. It's kind of easy to cruise at that point. But if you're Arizona, I think it's crucial that you get ahead early tonight. You have to take, you know, the pressure off of yourselves the best as possible and allow Torrey to be very aggressive with this bullpen if Zach Gallen doesn't have it again tonight.
Chris, you were a coach with the Dodgers. It's weird with Seager because it always seemed like there was an odd relationship with he and the Dodgers. I don't really know how to explain it, but he is a top 10 player, boys. Like,
no doubt.
Is maybe even better than top 10 at this point?
I would argue he's incredible. Top five for sure. Yes. And you're right. He's a little different cat, right? I mean, it's not a bad thing. He's just a little more reserved and quiet. And I think we saw Kyle for so many years, who's a former teammate of mine, be a little bit more boisterous, a little bit more of a leadership, you know, from a public perspective type role.
Totally.
And Corey is a little more reserved than that. And I don't think that's a bad thing. Like I said, he's very focused. I laughed at the Fox pregame show. He had Mookie Betts trying to get his attention, and he's over there blowing him off like, man, I don't have time for you right now. I'm about to go out and hit another home run in this World Series and take my team up 3-1. But he is a different player, and I think he kind of leads from quiet example and not so much of a vocal standpoint. He might be a little more vocal in the clubhouse, but he is a little bit more reserved as a person, and I think that kind of plays well for, you know, what he's trying to do right now.
I love the way you broke down Seager. And guys, I think one thing that gets overlooked with Corey Seager, because Kyle is not quite as big, Corey Seager is a big dude.
Yes, right? He is a monster.
Yeah.
There is no denying. 6'3", 220. I mean, he is put together, and he moves like a shortstop. You know, he acts like a shortstop. And then you look at him, and you're like, dude, this guy's a middle linebacker. I don't know really how this plays out. But his quick twitch muscles, I mean, he's so fast. He's so quick, and he's just absolutely locked in right now, which is insane to think about. You think about the three hits he had in this series, they were all two-run bombs. It's kind of crazy that he could do something like that after a quiet ALCS. Excuse me. He's kind of turned it on a little bit more from the offensive standpoint, but boy, has he really done damage defensively as well.
Chris, one of your former teams, of course, the Rangers, do they celebrate a World Series tonight in Arizona?
Yeah, that's a great question. And honestly, I know I just said that I think this might be the Diamondbacks' best chance to win a game. I actually said the same point. I think this could be Texas's as well. You have the hottest pitcher on your team right now, Nate Eovaldi, who got hit around a little bit in game one of this series. But I think we'll see a different guy tonight. He'll be able to make those adjustments. But you've also got a full complement of leverage bullpen relievers, which is far less than the Arizona Diamondbacks have, I might add. So it's even crazier to think that they're in this spot to begin with. But this offense is firing on all cylinders. They had great at-bats against Zach Gallen in game one. You know, it was a little bit closer of a game because they had to win it late. But I think with the momentum rolling on their side, they have every bit of a chance to win and celebrate tonight as they do tomorrow.
Chris, back to dad duty. Thank you for the break. We appreciate it.
Yep,
we needed the information.
That's right. Unpaid Uber driver. That's all I am.
That sounds fun. SiriusXM Major League Baseball Network radio host, of course, Chris Jimenez 5 on Twitter. Thank you, Chris. Enjoy the baseball. We appreciate you. Okay,
you got it,
from
guys,
Chris to Palm. Of course, Mike Palm joining us next here as we'll get the debate opened up with he and Amal Shaw. It's coming up. Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
You know, we're all used to routine, so I think when I introduce our next guest, it's going to disappoint a lot of you and a lot of us because it's going to feel like a Friday. See what I did, Samich? Don't worry. People love you regardless if it's Wednesday or Friday as we welcome you back here. Sharp Money
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. And because he is such a professional, VSiN host Mike Somich, of course, the handle every Saturday and Sunday with Matt Brown. He's also one of the best horse players on the planet, so you can check out his coverage all weekend with my boys Aaron and Jared over at RacingDudes.com. And on Friday, he's going to be at Santa Anita for Breeders' Cup. Because of that, I want everybody to know, our bosses to know. He said, I'm such a professional, I can join you Wednesday. He gave us a couple options. We said, hey, Scott, can you do Friday? Scott could do Friday. And here is the one and only Mike Somich. Somich, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. I am so excited for the Breeders' Cup this year. It's going to be a phenomenal 2 days of racing. The last couple years, we've had a lot of heavy favorites in the races, so it's not as good a betting cards. This year, you're probably only going to see two, maybe three horses that are short-priced in these Breeders' Cup races. So you're going to have a lot of chances to make a lot of money. I'm playing a tournament over the weekend, both Friday and Saturday. So from a betting perspective, I am just absolutely jacked up about this Breeders' Cup, because I think it's going to be great. And the Classic, which is going to have a full field of 12, the draw made a big difference. Arabian Knight, who's going to be your post-time favorite, has to break out of the 12 post. Wants to get the lead, is going to have to clear a horse named Saudi Crown, who's coming out of the sixth post, who's got a ton of speed as well. And I think that makes that race wide open from a betting perspective as well. So just really looking forward to this weekend. Going to be a blast to be at the track. If you want to check out any of the coverage, go over to YouTube /racingdudes. Just actually finished up a podcast covering the late pick five, so you can check that out. And we'll be live Thursday night and Friday night from Arcadia out there. And so you can get our thoughts on the races heading into the weekend. I'll have articles up at VSiN.com for my best bets on both Friday and Saturday. So make sure you check that out if you're a subscriber as well, and get it on the action.
Of course, horse racing coverage from Somich over at VSiN.com. And then also over with our boys, part of the family as well, RacingDudes.com. Okay, great stuff, Mike. As we start here, were you surprised, shocked, blown away by Mark Davis last night? Middle of the night says, you're gone, McDaniels. Now, it was the right, it was the prudent move. I think we would all agree Josh McDaniels overmatched as a head coach, but surprised he's going to pay him off on the 4 years, huh?
Yeah, I'm surprised that this was the straw that broke the camel's back. I mean, there are so many other games I was expecting him to be fired after. I didn't even really think anything of it after that Monday night game where they got absolutely dominated by a pretty good Lions team. I'm not sure what was the defining moment and the reason why this is now when you decide to fire him. But yeah, it's the right move. I mean, he has failed as a head coach in two different stops now. Solid offensive coordinator when he has gotten hold of offenses, but he's clearly not the guy at the top that you want. I am surprised Mark Davis willing to pay him off for the 4 years, because he is notoriously cash poor right now from everything that you've heard. And so the fact that he wants to pay him off was a little bit surprising. That franchise is just, it's a mess right now. I mean, Davante Adams has to be regretting the decision to go there. Garoppolo now sitting. We're going to see this, the Adrian O'Connell start and see what that era is going to be like for this Raiders team. But they've got a ton of problems. And yeah, the head coach was one of them, but there's a lot of roster issues there too.
Mike, if you look around the league right now, who do you think is a potential candidate to get fired and where you see it having an impact on a team directly? Because what we talked about earlier was that it seemed like there was just complete disengagement. And part of the problem was not only just the way the team has been built, but the head coach himself. Any particular team that kind of jumps out to you?
When you think about the coaches that could get fired, I don't think there's any world that they get fired in. I mean, like the Broncos have wildly underperformed, but you're not getting rid of Peyton, right? And you look at Belichick in New England, he's not going to get fired midseason either. If I was looking at anyone, it'd be Ron Rivera at this point. We just saw them sell off two defensive ends at the trade deadline. That Washington Commanders team has underperformed, that everyone was staking their claim on having Sam Howell as the quarterback, and there's been mixed results there. To me, he would be the one that I would look at, but a lot of the bad teams just flipped coaches, and so you're not going to get rid of Gannon in Arizona. You're not going to get rid of Reich in Carolina. And so you really have to look at someone who's been there for a couple of years and has been underperforming. I guess you could look at Eberflus in Chicago, but it doesn't feel like he's going to get let go either. And to be honest, I don't see letting go of Eberflus or letting go of Rivera really getting you any different results from this year's teams.
Long-term bettors know you're always going to get that first week, first game bump of energy from a new coach, whether it's a new coach or an interim coach. When changes are made, just the human condition, you're generally going to get a bump in energy. So I bring that up because we can take a look right now. The Giants are at Vegas. Antonio Pierce is in as the new head coach of the Raiders.
Again, he's going to stay at home. O'Connell's going to be the starter. The Giants are struggling. They're dealing with their injuries. The number is 1.5, and the total is 37. I mean, again, it's an angle that we use across myriad sports that is new coach, new energy. Generally doesn't go for much more than a week, but you always look to it that first week, Mike.
Yeah, if you look at the numbers over the last 5-6 years, it's been phenomenal playing these teams after the coach has been fired. I'm a little concerned with the O'Connell part of it, though. I mean, you don't generally have a rookie starting quarterback making the first career start when you're seeing these coaches fired. You usually have somewhat of the team intact. And to me, that kind of makes me not want to necessarily just jump on board for this trend. When I was looking at this game, it looks like we're getting Daniel Jones. If it is Daniel Jones, I think that number might be a little bit light. I probably end up on the Giants. I think the Giants is a teaser here, probably your best look, taking it up to 7.5 right now, sitting at that 1.5 number. I just don't trust that there's much talent on this Raiders team, and you should get a better effort, but I don't know if effort's the issue right now with that Las Vegas Raiders team. I think it's more of just who is actually playing from snap to snap for them. And again, having a rookie quarterback who, yeah, looked pretty good in the preseason, but from what we've seen of him in the regular season, I haven't been overly impressed, and I don't think it's necessarily an upgrade over Jimmy G, so even though he did play awful on Monday night. So I'm not really rushing to the window here to bet the Raiders just because of that trend.
Yeah, I don't think, Patrick, it's an upgrade over Jimmy G, no question about that. But to me, I think this team is saying, let's make some decisions going forward. What type of coach do we want to bring in based on what type of quarterback we may potentially have? If we've got a good quarterback, maybe we go get an offensive-minded person who can elevate them. If not, maybe we look towards building on the defense around Max Crosby and what we have there.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised that, if I was an NFL GM, I would be handling these franchises a lot different. I'd be playing much more of the NBA style and just ripping down the parts and getting what you can. If I was going to fire McDaniel, I would have seen what I could have gotten for Devontae Adams, see what I could have gotten for Max Crosby, because if you assume this is going to be a 4 or 5 year rebuild, are those really going to be key players on your roster in 4 or 5 years? Or are the draft picks more valuable that you could get back for them if you are able to move them? You open up some salary cap as well. To me, this was a surprising move because you didn't see any other moves that kind of went along with it. Yeah, you got to figure out what you have at quarterback with O'Connell. I think you're going to be able to know that pretty quickly here. And it's not like you need Devontae Adams there to figure it out. I would rip so many of these organizations down to the studs. Tampa's another one. I would have probably tried to trade 4, 5, 6 players off that roster just to start making sure I have a cupboard full of draft picks and I can start rebuilding that franchise for an actual playoff run versus just wanting to be a middling team. There's nothing worse in the NFL than being a middling team where you're just sneaking in as the 7th seed. And then, you know, if you're the Raiders, you get the 7 seed, great. Now you have to go win 3 road games against Burrow, against Herbert, against Allen. You're not doing that. You're not getting to a Super Bowl. You might as well be awful and then start building up versus being a middling team in the NFL.
Patrick,
yeah, that's where you have to have a strong ownership and strong vision and philosophy because, and Amal, I'll let you jump in here. It's almost like when you allow GMs to GM for their job and coaches to coach for the job, it usurps the grander plan. And that has to come from Amal above the coach and above the GM. That mission statement has to start with the owner. So they don't, again, usurp whatever you're trying to build long-term to keep their job short-term.
Patrick, I think you summarized it perfectly. And yesterday we talked about it, Mike, when Dobbs went to from Arizona to Minnesota. We really didn't understand the move from a Minnesota perspective. He's solid. He's not going to get you past San Francisco, Philadelphia, and these other teams in the NFC. You're only going to hurt your draft stock. And I agree with both of you. I think you're absolutely right, Mike. You use a great analogy. Tear it down to the studs and look to rebuild. I just don't get it. And I think one of you guys touched upon it, Patrick did, with ownership. Sometimes they don't realize that sometimes you have to take a step back in order to be able to move forward. And to me, I'm surprised more teams don't liquidate some of their stud players like you referenced Adams and Crosby to be able to get draft capital.
It's the ownership. I think it's very hard to go to a billionaire who has been successful their whole life and say this asset you have is going to have to be awful for 3 years. That is the fastest way to become elite. And you look around the league, if you don't have a top 10 quarterback, you've got no chance winning a Super Bowl. You have to have one of those. And so the key has to be what's the fastest route to getting a quarterback like that? It's not drafting 14th. It's not drafting 15th. It's drafting consistently in the top 5 where you can take your pick. You have your scouts who can analyze the quarterback of the future for you and you hope you hit. But you're not getting one through free agency. You have to be getting one through the draft and you have to be willing to be bad to be able to go out and get one.
And what were the Bears doing? The Bears gave up an asset that couldn't be more valuable, a high second rounder for a guy they legitimately don't control and has all the leverage. What the hell was that?
That was the most mind-boggling move of the day. Like, you're not a buyer. Why are you picking up a DN on a rental contract for a team that like needs to lose football games to be able to go out and get those high-level assets? And like you said, that's going to be the 34th, 35th pick in the draft? That's a good pick, and you're giving up something for it. It was just that was the biggest head-scratcher for me yesterday.
Guys, is there anything at all we're missing on that deal? Because, I mean, we've talked about this, Patrick. I can't think of a single reason why it's justified from Chicago's perspective.
I mean, maybe they have a backdoor agreement or a side agreement that Sweat was going to extend. I don't know, but why would he? Why would he give up leverage? There's no way. He has to go out there and test the market. I don't know. Do you come up with anything, Samich?
I mean, if he doesn't sign, they get a third-round pick back as a compensatory pick. But, like, great. Congratulations. You gave up a second to get a third for 8 games of a player that probably is not on your roster in the future. And are you sure you really want to sign Sweat to a big long-term deal anyway with all the other holes you have in that team? Like, just a head-scratcher.
Yeah, I don't. Maybe that's Poles trying to GM for his job, like we said. And maybe bottom line, if Sweat helps him win a game or two, it's bewildering, to say the least. All right, Samich is here on a Wednesday. Got plenty to do, including college football tonight.